Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Each week, Canadian running staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the news, results, and drama from the exciting world of running. This is The Rundown. So this is a very exciting edition of The Rundown for a couple of reasons. The first being, of course, that yesterday was the Marathon Project, the race that we have all been preparing for it feels like forever. I feel like this has been the beacon of light at the end of the tunnel for this weird year of 2020 that has been so far. And it did not disappoint. And so we are so excited to get to all of the storylines, the results, the thrills, the disappointments, everything that came out of that incredible race yesterday. But the other super exciting thing that makes this edition of The Rundown extra special is that we are joined by a guest co-host, one of my favorite podcasters and an all-around awesome guy, Mr. Chris Chavez. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This is going to be a lot of fun. I can already tell. And yeah, I always take up people on the opportunity to just geek out over, you know, running things.
Well, you've come to the right place because Maddie and I talk about that every week, how we just love nerding out together over this stuff. And I know that you share a love of that nerding as well. So we're really, really glad to have you.
For sure.
So, Chris, I know that your day job now is to cover track and field marathons and the Olympics for Sports Illustrated, but you have your hand in a lot of different pots here. You're the founder and podcast director at Sidious Mag, which we will definitely link all of this in our show notes because the Sidious Mag podcast is an absolute must listen for anyone who loves track and field, road running, or anything related to athletics in America and beyond. And then you're also the host of the Runners of New York podcast. You've got an incredible background in sports journalism, working for ESPN and Flow Track. And I know that yourself, you're a former track runner turned marathoner. Have I more or less covered the bio there?
I like that. You know, it was short and sweet because, you know, sometimes when I'm asked to just run through the entire gambit of things, like it could take a while. But I think you nailed it perfectly.
Well, do you want to fill in some of the gaps that I might have missed there? Give us a little more about yourself.
Yeah, so I've been writing for Sports Illustrated and editing for them for the last 5 years. It was my first job out of college. And while I was in college, I started covering track and field in 2012, like I think before the London Olympics. I was just a very average sprinter in high school, and I really didn't see any sort of like real passion or path forward with the sport once I got to college. But then one night I just stayed in and got captivated watching the track meet at Oxy out in California, and saw some incredible performances and figured I want to learn more about the sport before the Olympics. And then from there was watching old race videos, reading old stories, and I got hooked pretty quick. And then sooner or later I volunteered working at a track meet at Flow Track. And then that just kickstarted like a little bit of a, just me working with them, for the next 2 years, where I would sacrifice college weekends to go and travel out to track meets across the country. And through that, I got to know a lot of, you know, coaches, agents, athletes. And so, it was really rewarding. It's funny because Kate, I think the first time I ever interviewed you was probably at like an NTL meet in Canada. And it might have even been like Toronto in 2013. So it's just so funny to think of how small the running community is and how, you know, connected I've just become just throughout being on the ground at all these different meets all over the place. But it's really been the reason I got into sort of sports journalism is because, you know, I want to travel, which has been tough this year, but I want to meet interesting people and tell some awesome stories. And I've been able to sort of do that, whether, you know, it was with Flow Track, with ESPN, and now with Sports Illustrated. And then in 2017, I figured it was post 2016 Olympics. I still want to cover every little nerdy aspect of the sport, but I didn't want to bug my editors there too much. So I started Sidious Mag with a couple of friends of mine. And in the last couple of years, we've really pivoted towards podcasting. And so I love that medium of storytelling. And so I think this year I've edited more than 150 hours worth of just podcasts just across a bunch of different shows. So I like to stay busy. That's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah, that's pretty apparent given what you just told us. That's incredible, Chris. And I want to ask you a lot more questions there, but I have yet to say hi to Maddie Kelly. So we got to bring our co-host in. Maddie, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Guys, I think that the 2013 Toronto NTL is our precise intersection of all three of us, because I was in the high school girls invite 800. My mom had picked me up from summer camp because I was working there. I received like a last minute invite because I didn't make the initial roster of eight. I wasn't necessarily a high school stud.
How things have changed.
I was kind of like a call up, but I was already working at summer camp. So my mom came to get me. I think I slept for like 48 hours straight because I'd just been eating tater tots and staying up all night. And then I had a great race.
That's amazing.
Kate, you also raced there and Chris was there as a journalist. So that's, I think, probably the one time we've all been in the same place at once.
I love that. I think that's so cool. That's actually, you know, that race was really special for me because that's where I ran my standard for my first world championship team. And I think, Chris, I do remember chatting with you after that. So, man, like, we've got some really cool stuff to go back to, the three of us here. I like that.
It's really cool. I remember right after that meet, I got introduced to ketchup chips, and that was a thing out in Canada. So that trip just kind of really blew my mind. I was open to all these new different things. Canada holds such a, you know, soft place in my heart because, you know, my coach is Canadian. Kate Gustafson. And so, I miss, you know, going out to those meets.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there'll be chance to return to them at some point in 2021, at least. But let's chat a little bit more about that. How did you get linked up with Kate Gustafson and what does that coaching relationship look like?
Right. So in addition to when I'm not behind a keyboard or behind a microphone, you know, discussing running, I'm probably out there just doing it myself. And in 2017, I joined like the Brooklyn Track Club here in New York City, which ever since then, just being in that sort of team environment has really just kind of taken my running to a new level. I remember just kind of running things at like 8 minute pace and all that kind of stuff, running for fun, like for the first couple of years that I got into distance running. And then after training with like more people and with the coach, you know, my PRs just started dropping like crazy. And I think last year was a huge year. 2019, I PR'd in everything from the mile to the marathon, which is phenomenal. And at some point during that year, Kate was an assistant coach with the Brooklyn Track Club. And, you know, I just really love the way her training philosophy is. I love just how responsive she is to everyday sort of communication, where she'll understand and tweak things if I'm having a rough day at work or I'm not getting enough sleep and that kind of stuff. And so I love just how hands-on she's been. And so, she helped me train for the Berlin Marathon last year, where I notched a pretty big PR, and this year we were hoping to go under 3 hours, but you know, now we've shifted our focus to doing some shorter stuff and then maybe get after it next fall. But no, I sing the praises for Kate any chance I get.
Awesome. That's great. I'm really glad that connection worked out for you. And I know that she's been living in New York for a while now. So we've got Canadians everywhere. You can't escape us.
The nicest people. Yeah.
Well, thanks. You have to say that on our podcast. I appreciate that. So, Chris, I want to go back a bit to your really incredible journalistic career. And I know that, you know, you kind of described how you just were kind of this gritty, hardworking college kid who had a passion for the sport and a passion for journalism. And you've turned that into a really successful career. You've sat down with some of our sports, perhaps most impressive performers. Can you give us like an idea of some of your favorite or like the most profound interviews you've done or like the coolest people you've had a chance to chat with?
Yeah. So the easy answer there, usually for like, if some random friend of mine asked me at a bar, who's not really a runner, is always to say like Usain Bolt, cause he's like the greatest ever. And like the name that everyone knows, but with him, like I've only really gotten the chance to sit down for like 15 minutes, like one-on-one, which is still awesome. But through the podcast, on the City of Smag podcast, I've actually, you know, been able to have some really deep conversations with the likes of like Nick Willis and Jenny Simpson. And so those are like some of my favorite conversations, really picking their brains about the ins and outs about certain races, whether it's them practically putting me in their shoes for Olympics and World Championships. I think those have been some really awesome conversations. And I love doing them in person, which has been, you know, kind of a little bit of a shift and change in 2020, because you can sit down for, you know, 90 minutes and it doesn't really feel like that. So yeah, I'm hoping to have more of those in 2021 once the world begins to kind of, you know, go back to what it used to be. And yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of fun. I think I've done 200 episodes of the Sidious Mag podcast, and there've been, you know, really funny conversations, really deep conversations. I just kind of like to keep it pretty laid back with these guests. And so that's always fun. And that's always my goal.
Who's been your most surprising interview, Chris? Someone who you thought it might be a bit of like a ho-hum assignment, and then you were really endeared to them afterward.
Oh, that's a good one. So I think the most surprising podcast I've had was with Joe Kovacs, the shot putter world champion in 2019. And initially the interview was just going to be a little bit about the fact that he won last year. And I, first ever shot putter I'd had on the podcast, because I realized, you know, you also think about things sometimes in metrics. You think, I'm not going to get a ton of downloads off a shot put episode. But with him, we ended up speaking for, you know, more than 90 minutes, I think it was. And he just had an amazing story. You know, his mom was the one who taught him how to throw the shot put. His wife is the person who coaches him now. He's had, you know, a really, really interesting life story. And he and I have actually been in talks about writing a book together. And it's something we kind of have wanted to explore. And it's just so interesting, because you think about, it's like a shot put book is not going to sell, just as like, you know, it's not going to get the downloads, but it's his life story, which was so fascinating and interesting to me. So keep your eyes on, you know, something possibly in 2021, because yeah, he was phenomenal.
So I know that this is true for Maddie and I, just through the work we've done in the sport. And I'm curious about this for yourself as well. So you said you were a sprinter in high school, and then you've obviously moved up to the marathon. So you've got a real running background. I'm assuming you were always a fan of the sport, given that you were covering it. But have you learned a lot more through this job about the non, like the field events, or the, you know, kind of the race walk? Like I know for Maddie and I, we've just become not experts, but certainly better versed than we were previously through the research that we do for this job. And it's like allowed us to feel more connected to the sport, I think. Has that been true for you as well?
Oh, definitely. Because in high school, I actually would say I wasn't much of a fan of the sport, where I was like most people, who I just watched the Olympics for, you know, 5 minutes to see Bolt run two races, and that would be it. So if you would have asked me in like 2008, what was going on in track at the Olympics, I would have had no clue. It wasn't until 2012 that I really got into it. And yeah, it has been, I guess, like through those conversations with these athletes that I've really started to pay more attention to detail. Like Joe Kovacs continues to be a great example, because he was telling me all these different things about just the style in which he throws. And it's something that you just don't pick up from watching the broadcast, but he was like, you know, he's got to throw the shot put a different way than Ryan Krauser, because he's got, you know, 6 or 7 inches of height on him. Joe ends up benching 1,000. I think he benches 1,000 pounds when Ryan Krauser can only bench maybe 700 or something like that. Still pretty crazy, but it's just absolutely insane to me. And so I appreciate the field events for that kind of stuff. You know, I've had conversations with Gwen Berry, and so learned about her and the life that some of these throwers have, because it's not the most lucrative side of the sport. So yeah, your eyes do get a little bit more open by having sort of these conversations where the athletes just, you know, it's not that they let their guard down totally, but they do just open up.
That's awesome. Maddie, I know that's been really true for you too, eh? Like you talked about, do you want to maybe can you spill the beans a little on your background? Because we've talked about it off the record. You don't have to go full detail, but.
Yeah, I'll cop to it. So okay. I was not a running nerd by any stretch of the imagination. I've always loved running personally. Like I've been on the cross country team since grade 6. It was something I liked doing. It was something I was okay at in high school and then got much better at in university. But I got a job at a local running store. And I remember in the interview, and this was in my 5th year of undergrad, and in the interview, the owner was like, "How long's a marathon?" That was her first question. And I honestly struggled. Like I sat there for a minute and I was kind of like, 42K. And she was like, 0.2. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll take your word for it. And it was actually at that job that I met Jeremy, because they hired him 2 weeks after they hired me. and we worked together, and sort of through him, because he was like the epitome of a track nerd. So through him, and also just through the people who came into the store, and they had a run group there, and I learned what a world major was, and I watched the London Marathon for the first time. And so that was sort of like introduction number one. But then when I started this job, it was like, you know, leagues. I needed to be leagues ahead of where I was. Like my first day on the job, I was looking back through my old notebooks. There's like, you know, 15 of them now, but like notebook number one, day one, I literally wrote Galen Rupp, former Oregon Duck marathoner. Like I was like, that's how green I was. Jeremy had to tell me what Let's Run was. Like it was like a whole, without him, it would have been like truly a nightmare. And now, you know, I kind of know this stuff relatively forwards, backwards, up and down, but it was certainly, it was a humble beginning. And there was a lot of faking in the first little bit.
That's amazing. And, you know, I'll give Jeremy also credit for helping advance sort of just my personal running career, because I remember running my first couple of half marathons, and these were nothing quick, but I would, you know, and I think it was like training for like my first or second marathon. I was so happy about, you know, some of these long runs that I was doing. But, you know, when you're running in a city like New York, there's constantly like red lights. So you're stopping for a bit. And so I'd be happy with like what the Strava said at the end for like the total amount of time. But Jeremy was the first person to text me and like point out, he's like, why did this long run take you like 3.5 hours? And it's because I think you could see like the elapsed time. And then from there, I've just been so cognizant of the fact that like someone else can see that. And it's like, yeah, maybe that Strava Flex isn't as nice as you thought it was. So Jeremy kind of like opened my eyes to like, yeah, you know, people are paying attention.
He still does that with me. He'll be like, who did you call on your run today? Like he can see that there's like a 20 minute gap in the middle. Cause he knows like I'm an 800 runner. I don't need to run for 70 minutes straight. So like sometimes I would just like take a call in the middle of a run. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, why did your run take you 2 hours? He's like, you go 10K.
I love this. I love this. And I love that Jeremy and I were a couple years apart, but we were on a couple junior national teams together going back in the day. So we've got a couple different points of intersection here. We've got the 2013 Toronto National Track Meet, and then we've got Jeremy Ray, Maddie's current beau. It's good. It's all good stuff. I love that we can nerd out on this.
Canadian running ghost rider.
There you go.
Former. Now, you know, I do it on my own now.
Editor, fact checker.
Yeah.
Awesome. Chris, is there anything else? I mean, I'm sure we could talk forever just about our connections and just about your work. Any other kind of career highlights that stand out for you, or other kind of tidbits that you think our audience might kind of sink their teeth into as they all flock, I'm sure, en masse to the Sidious Meg podcast after listening to this?
Yeah, I'd love that. No, it's just like, for me, I just continue doing it because people listen. I think the most rewarding part for me is receiving messages here and there that people enjoyed an episode, seeing them posted on like their Instagram story and stuff like that. It's always just funny when it happens in person, like waiting in line to get my bib at like the Berlin Marathon, and someone behind me will be like, you're the podcast guy. I'm like, yep, that's me. And so those are always really nice moments. There's actually a really funny one actually once where I was using the bathroom right before like a relay race, like a road relay race with a couple of friends of mine, and some teenage kid catches me in the bathroom, and I'm like washing my hands, and he just says, he's like, Chris Chavez. And I was like, hey man, how's it going? And I was like, you know what? I appreciate these, just not in the bathroom. But yeah, it's that's what keeps me going. It's just, as long as people keep reading, listening, whatever, I'm going to keep doing it.
I love it. I think that's probably what Maddie and I would say as well. Although I get recognized in fewer bathrooms, I think, than you do, Chris. Something to aspire to.
Yeah. Get asked if I'm the, I got asked once if I'm the 8K national champion. And that's about the only time I've ever been recognized. It's like a few thousand meters off, but honestly, I'll take it. Like,
I have a hard time getting through this podcast. I think I do a pretty good job of it, but I certainly do a poorer job of getting through life without making references to either Friends or The Office on a daily basis. So I was rewatching an episode the other day, and it was the Michael Scott Fun Run relay for the cure for rabies or something. He had hit Meredith with his car, and they were doing this 5K. And that reminded me, Maddie, because Pam walks up to him and she's like, Michael, 5K means 5 kilometers, not 5,000 miles. slight difference there.
Oh, it's such a good episode. Yeah.
It's so good. All right. Well, we've got a lot of running to talk about, so I think we should jump right into this because, you know, again, Chris, we'd love to have you on again. And I think we'll probably continue sprinkling a couple questions about yourself into the rest of this episode. But we've got to really dive into all of the awesomeness that happened less than 24 hours ago at the Marathon Project in Chandler, Arizona. So, Chris, do you want to do the honors of setting this up for us a little bit? Maybe just like a quick overview of some of the top runners who were entered going in and, you know, the overview of the race itself.
Yeah. So it was something that was put on our calendar maybe, I don't know, maybe 12 weeks ago or something like that, with just enough time to really build the anticipation and hype for it. Major kudos to Josh Cox, Ben Rosario, and the people at Big River Running Company who like really put this thing together. And for a lot of people, it was just like this last crack at the marathon to post personal best, to post really fast times that could possibly, you know, help financially. In some cases, some of these contracts are structured where there's bonuses. And so the agents and coaches really recognized that and decided to go through with this race. And the first couple names that were announced, you know, were a lot of the Northern Arizona elite runners. Sarah Hall, I think, was announced a couple days later, which was crazy to me at the very beginning, because I'm like, this woman just never gets tired, you know, running 11 weeks after her 221. No, 222 at the London Marathon in those cold and rainy conditions. And then after that, the men's side was also pretty stacked, where we were going to see people coming back from like the US Olympic Marathon trials. There were, I think, more than half of the top 10 were involved in the race, which is great to see. It just goes to show just that American depth and like the fact that not many of these guys had the opportunity to go out to something like London, but still wanted to race. So it was also redemption for some people. Scott Faubel, you know, ran 209 at the Boston Marathon in 2019, but then didn't perform as well as he hoped. He finished 12th at the trials. And so it was a rough summer for him to get that motivation back, but he was considered, I guess, one of the favorites coming into this. You've got, you know, the Canadian favorite Cam Lebbins coming in, trying to rebound from, you know, dropping out at the London Marathon. And there's still like Olympic implications on the line for some other international runners. The U.S. team has been decided, but you always get some sort of excitement there to see who's gonna do it. And so yeah, there was a couple Canadians. I think Ben Preisner was another one in the mix. And on the women's side, that's been just like an exciting race for me to follow from afar as well. Just the shuffling that's going on there. And Natasha Wodak, and I believe it was Kinsey Middleton, I think were the two big Canadian contenders there. It was a lot of storylines that you could have followed coming into the race. And then the big one was Sarah Hall going after possibly Dina Castor's American record. She wouldn't call it an American record attempt, just to kind of stave off a little bit of that pressure that comes when you bill it into what it actually is. But she was going to go for it. And so when you do the math with the anticipated pace, I think it was 69:40 for the first half. It just makes sense. And the men were all trying to run under 209. So we knew we were going to have like a really exciting race on our hands. And then, you know, just a lot of surprises happened on the day.
Great setup. Thanks for that. And again, just for clarity's sake for our listeners, the U.S. team has been named in the marathon going back to the Olympic trials. I think it was the last race almost that happened before everything shut down, perhaps other than L.A., which Maddie was at. Right, Maddie, you were at that L.A. marathon, which was like the last thing before the world shut down.
I got home and the next day the quarantine was announced and I was like, I probably should do that, too. I don't.
Before we really knew what quarantine was.
Yeah. When we were still like, this thing sounds scary.
Yeah. But so those US trials had happened just 2 weeks before that, Chris? It was sort of right around that same time.
Yeah, I think it was a week right before, because the trials were on the 29th of February. And then I think LA was maybe that following weekend. So
right.
I always just look at March 10th to 13th as like the period of time that the world like really shut down, and we didn't know for how long this was going to be. You know, you start to see all these other races come off the calendar, and, you know, this was exciting to look at, because all the majors for next year have already been pushed back to the fall. So when it comes to someone like Cam, I think even said before the race, he's like, this, you have to put all your chips into this race because there are going to be very, very limited opportunities, if any, next spring. I know there's optimism because the vaccine is starting to get rolled out everywhere. But you just don't know when you're going to get those large, you know, mass races back again.
Well, I was going to say, we've mentioned Cam a few times. Do we want to get into?
Sure. Yeah.
Cam's sort of unfortunate rap sheet.
Yeah.
For marathons.
Maybe just before you do that, Maddie, I'd love just to maybe give one more kind of layer to this setup, just so that we're all on the same page with sort of the implications of this race. So, Chris, as you mentioned, this is really like one of the only opportunities, certainly the only opportunity, like firmly on the calendar at the moment for folks to try to get after either a personal best or, in the case of non-Americans, an Olympic qualifying standard. Because as we said, the way that the US system works is that you all name your top, like the top three performers at those Olympic trials in the men's and women's races, as long as they have standard, are going to the games. So that's been decided, you know, months ago. But there were, you know, in addition to the Canadians, there were a number of Mexican athletes and other international runners who still have those spots available for their team. So just a quick recap, going back a year ago to the Toronto Waterfront Marathon, Dana Pitaretsky and Trevor Hofbauer both were the first Canadians across the line at our Canadian Olympic trials. And because they both ran standard in their races, they are the only two Canadians currently named to our Olympic team, meaning that there are two spots available on both the men's and women's side. And going into this race, we only had one other man with standard within the qualifying window, which is Tristan Woodfine, who ran a 2:10:51 just a couple of months ago. And then on the women's side, a little more exciting because, again, Dana's got that one spot, but we also have Melindy Elmore, our Canadian record holder, with a 2:24:50 from Houston earlier this year. And then sort of sitting in that third qualifying spot going into this weekend was Rachel Cliff with her former Canadian record of 2:26:56. And then also keeping things interesting in the mix is that Lindsay Tessier doesn't technically have the standard. She hasn't run under that 2:29:30, which is the women's Olympic standard. But because she placed in the top 10 in the marathon at the Doha World Championships last year, that is the equivalent of a marathon qualifying spot. So that kind of sets up what was on the line coming into this.
Well, weekend. And also Rachel Cliff was supposed to race.
That's right.
So it was supposed to be her and Natasha head to head kind of vying for that 2:26 whatever to see who crossed the line first. And then Rachel Cliff pulled out with an injury about like 10 days before. And then Emily Setlak pulled out just after her. And Emily Setlak has run 2:29:43.
Yeah, really close. Yeah.
So love the drama.
Standard isn't good enough to make this team, which is a new thing for Canadian marathoning.
And a really exciting thing. So again, just to keep in mind on the women's side, if you wanted to be in that third spot, you'd have to run faster than 2:26:56. So quite a bit faster than standard. Anyway, that's our setup. Cam Levins, Maddie, I want you to take this away. Of course, he has run under standard and he's our Canadian record holder, but he hasn't done it in the window.
No, in 2018, he ran the Canadian record in his marathon debut of 2:09:25, a time he has not touched since, despite now three attempts. So he ran a 2:15 at Scotia 2019 when he was hoping to make the team, and then he didn't finish in London, and then he ran a 2:12 yesterday. So certainly his best race in a while, but there's no way that that's where Cam Levins wants to be this close to the team selection.
And what were your thoughts on Cam's race yesterday, Maddie? Because it was pretty dramatic.
Well, he ran a Canadian 30K record by 1/100th of a second. But I wasn't, like, Cam usually swings big. Like in all of these races that I've watched him run in the past, you know, 2.5 years, he always looks good at the half, and he even still looks all right at 25K, and then 30K is when he's run into trouble. And yesterday he didn't fall apart quite as much as he had in the previous marathons, but obviously he wasn't able to maintain the pace he was on, which was roughly a 2:09 flat at 30K. So yeah. It's not a bad marathon. It's still his second best marathon. It is just, as someone who has high standards for himself and it's an Olympic year, I think that would be a disappointing day for him personally.
Yeah, I mean, he was leading for a good chunk of this race. So there were pacers that were set up on both the men's and women's side for, I believe, at least the first and second pack. Is that right, Chris? Were there pacers set up for the first pack for the men trying to go sub 209, for the women, for Sarah, and then I think also for that chase pack of the women as well?
Yeah, so there were two sets of pacers on the men's side, and then I think there were four on the women's side. On the men's side, it was interesting to see Cam leading for some of it too in that first group, because he could have played it, I guess, a little bit safer and just gone with the second group, which I think was targeting sort of that Olympic standard. But knowing Cam and the fact that there was talk before London that he was in like 208 shape, he definitely wanted to take that big swing with that front group. And you always have to wonder like how much of it is also mental towards the end. So much pressure to get this time being the record holder. But it was funny because I was on a call with Alex Lohr, who was my former colleague at FlowTrack, and he was saying, I think Cam is still missing that sort of like, I guess that confidence in these sort of races, to see himself as sort of like the big dog where people are waiting on him to make the big move. It could be maybe a little bit intimidating when there's a guy like Jared Ward, who's been at the Olympics for the marathon and finished sixth right next to you, but Cam's got the credentials too, to make sort of that big move. And so, it was interesting to see how those last couple miles played out, and that unfortunately the wheels came off after he set that 30K mark. But if you give him a chance, I think next spring, somehow, if he finds the right race for it, he could still put it together. But it's getting pretty competitive, I would say, with the other guys running fast as well.
Yeah, this always is curious for me, because in some ways, I think it goes back to the psychology of what it does to you when you hit it out of the park on your very first go, right? And he did that at home, on home soil, well, not at home, but in Canada, in a race that was set up to be, you know, just the perfect race for him, a ton of home crowd advantage. And he runs a 40 plus year old Canadian record, right? And to do that on your first time out and don't get me wrong, the Toronto Waterfront Marathon is an incredible international race, but it's not the same perhaps as going overseas or going down, you know, in an attempt to set an Olympic standard, right?
Well, and Canadians are so freaking jazzed on Cam because he did that. Like there was that day, there was a camera called the Cam Cam. Like there was a car that just followed Cam. Like it is a lot of pressure. You know, he's kind of our marathon hero if we were to have one. So I imagine there's no way he takes it lightly.
I also do like how it's like elevated so many of these other young guys. Like Ben Prisner is only 24, which is crazy to me, because I think you're seeing so many of these other younger runners start to make that jump. Rory Linkletter, also very young and ran really well. It would be a little bit sad to see him not make it in the marathon for the Olympics, knowing that he's the record holder. Then if he decides to give it a shot on the track and drop down to the 10K, that's not even like a given either, because you've got even like another group of young guys who haven't taken to the marathon yet, like a Ben Flanagan and like a Justin Knight, who can take some of those spots as well. I mean, Mo Ahmed. So it's kind of crazy. He's got his hands full in both buckets.
I love that you made that point, Chris, because I was thinking that too. Like in a way, he almost kind of like backwardsly shot himself in the foot, because by running that fast, I mean, we see it all the time. As soon as someone breaks down a barrier that no one was able to achieve, especially for decades, you see the floodgates open a little bit. And it's not surprising to me that a year after Cam runs that record that no one had broken for over 40 years, Trevor Hofbauer comes along and runs the second fastest time in Canadian history and also goes under the previous record, right? Like that's not surprising, but I think with Cam having done that, he really paved the way for the sport to move in a different direction in our country, and in some ways probably like made it more competitive for himself in the process.
But like, I'm sure ultimately that's what he would rather. Like it makes it tough, but I'm sure it's the same way Melissa Bishop is happy. She's got people breathing down her neck, and Melindy Elmore loves to see Natasha run 2:26. And like, you know, we're putting ourselves on the map in a country that was not so much kind of like, frankly, since like Kevin Sullivan-ish, a country that was on the map in terms of track and field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. No, I think that like cementing himself in history that way counts for so much. Should we stick with the Canadian men since we're here?
Yeah, let's talk about my boy, Ben Prisner.
Get after it, Maddie.
He's not actually my boy. He was good at cross country and I remember that. And I thought he was going to be the first Canadian across the line. So that's why he is, for all intents and purposes, my boy.
So your pick one.
He was my pick one. His 2:15 debut by himself during a pandemic, just running back and forth on a strip of lakeshore. Very impressive. So I was really looking forward to watching him run. He's run a couple solid halves. He's been super consistent in the past year. And there was really no rhyme or reason beyond those 3 points that I thought he was going to do well, but I'm glad he did. And yeah, I think it's super cool to see the younger generation, which includes him. And Tristan's only 27, this younger group of guys who are really running fast. And also I like how he ran his race. He was super conservative through half, like not super, but he wasn't taking any like big pulls. He was, you know, staying at the back. He even fell off the group for a little bit, caught back on, and then made up time in like the last 5K.
Yeah, I think that was the most impressive part for me, was like, given his young age and given that this was technically a debut, the maturity with which he ran was just so impressive. Like, to be, like you said, Maddie, off that group a little bit, work his way back up. But then once that big break happened with, you know, what was it, like 7K to go, and things kind of started tearing apart, he didn't lose his cool. And in fact, he just slowly worked on people, eventually passed Cam, and ended up running 2:10.17 for eighth place. And that's the fourth fastest time in Canadian history, well under the Olympic standard of 2:11.30. And pretty much, I mean, again, unless things change wildly in the new year, which could certainly happen, pretty well cements his spot on that Olympic team.
I saw a lot of like tweets about how so many of these guys who ran really well on Sunday never broke like 14 for the 5K. And so it just kind of like goes to show that it doesn't have to be the track. If he's 24 and took to the roads and runs 2:10, like, I've always been a proponent to want to see more younger guys get after it in the marathon, because if you wait till you're 28 or in your 30s after giving the track a go after go after go, but continue to fall short, I feel like you're losing out on a little bit of potential there for the marathon. But it's just so great to see that performance come together for him.
Well, even a Sarah Hall, I was looking at her PBs yesterday, and obviously really strong track runner, but like a 4:06.15, put that next to a 2:20 marathon, like it's leagues apart.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to counter that, because I think that range is unbelievable. I think there are very few marathoners who can run who have run a 4:06 in their career. I know what you're saying. They're not like internationally, it's not internationally competitive the same way, but I actually think that is so impressive.
No, so impressive. But what I'm saying is, if you haven't reached the highest echelon on the track, it doesn't mean that you're not destined for greatness on the roads.
Right.
You know, you don't have to do both. In fact, few people do both.
Yeah. She's the counterpoint to kind of like what I just said about like young people taking to the marathon, because she was after it in the steeplechase, in the 10K, in the 5K, and never made like an Olympic team on there. But now it's unfortunate the trials didn't shake out the way they did for her, but she's found that the marathon is her event. And even I believe she's 36 or 37, like she's thriving now at a time that most people would have maybe called it quits by now.
Yeah. And I was going to say that we're talking about all these young bucks on the men's side, which again, it's super exciting. But the top three women in this race, Sarah Hall, Kira D'Amato, and Kellen Taylor, I think the youngest of the three of them is 34 years old. And that's been a trend we've seen in Canada too with our women, which is really exciting for me as a 33-year-old.
Is Melindy? Melindy might have just turned 40.
She's 40. Melindy's 40 years old.
Yeah, our women's, and Natasha's 39.
Nine.
Yep.
So
we're
impressive.
We're going to have some kicking masters records. Best Canada. We do it best when we're old.
Rory Linkletter. Big PB for Mr. Linkletter. I know that, you know, here's the thing. All these guys went in wanting to get this Olympic standard. We know that was in the back of all of their minds. But Rory, I've been really impressed with his career as well. He's another Northern Arizona elite guy. We actually had him on the podcast when I was in Flagstaff just under a year ago. And Rory's one of these guys, also young, has had a lot of success on the track, you know, great NCAA athlete, you know, really, really strong half marathon. But this was only his second marathon ever. He debuted in a 2:16 back in a year ago at Scotiabank. And he ended up coming 17th in this race in 2:12:54, which is just a massive PB and a really impressive result overall. I was glad to see that for him.
Yeah, I've watched videos of him training with Scott Faubel. So I knew that if he's coming close to Scott in workouts or even like beating him in some reps, then things are going to bode well for him when it comes down to race day.
I think Rory must be happy with that. There's a 4-minute PB and is a huge step in the right direction. And again, still so young. So just because it might not happen for him this year, and there's still time, it could, but if it didn't happen for him this year, I think, you know, he's a guy who seems like he could certainly go another cycle.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And then speaking of guys who could go another cycle, Justin Kent, this was his actual marathon debut, the first time he's ever really touched the distance. He ended up running 2:17:22 for 27th spot, which again, for a debut, I think that's great.
Totally.
Oh, for sure.
And he went out hard. He hung with the leaders for a long time.
Well, this was kind of the fun thing to watch evolve, especially through the first half, is that all four of our guys were in that lead pack at that sub 2:09 pace. And I was wondering a little, because as you said earlier, Chris, like they could have made that choice to sit back a little bit, hang back with that second pack, which was going after that Olympic standard, which might have been the more reasonable approach. But, you know, we haven't even talked about this, but perfect weather conditions, awesome course, amazing setup, really flat, fast, you know, road. Why not get after it? I mean, if you blow up, you blow up. And I wouldn't even say any of these guys had a full on like meltdown. They couldn't hang with the pace, which is understandable. But I think that's kind of ballsy to get after it like that. I enjoy that.
I think Rory posted on Instagram saying that like the only way to run a marathon is to bank time and you can't convince me otherwise. And so I'm like, it's the painful way of doing it for sure.
Des literally said on the live feed, also Des, great job on the live feed. Great men's and women's coverage, super equal time. Love that. But Des said banking time in a marathon is a horrible idea. Like she just said it flat out.
And she knows a thing or two.
She knows a thing or two, but you know, more than one way to skin a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And yeah, you're right, Maddie. We should give huge kudos to USATF TV, Runner Space, as we know it, and the marathon project organizers in general, because I think at one point they had like the triple screen going. I never saw a quad screen, but I definitely saw the triple screen. And so they were able to follow all the different races evolving at the same time really well. So big appreciation for that coverage for sure.
I love the graphic that they put on that showed you just like the leader and then like the plus how many seconds behind they were, because it was a topic of conversation I think that Des once brought up on Twitter, where we've gotten so, I guess, like focused on times that it takes away from the actual racing. And with something like that, you're able to see, oh, wow, like there's only 14 guys in the lead pack, but the chase pack is only 2 or 3 seconds behind them. And I think it really, even though you're not able to get cameras at all different points of the course, really puts into context sort of like what you're missing sometimes. Because when you have to recap a marathon like that with someone like Ben Preisner or like Cam, we didn't get to watch most of the race, but now we have like this element alongside where it gave that sort of NASCAR feel. That it's like, okay, well, we know that that's the point that they fell off. And you can kind of just come back to that later on. There's still, there was split screen, which is really nice to see as well. It's something that people have been begging for such a long time. And I thought it was pretty well executed.
Yeah, as far as I, you know, from race coverage I've seen, I think this is probably getting up to being the new gold star for how we cover things. Understandably, a little easier when you have like no spectators. It was a 4.3-mile loop. Like it was set up pretty perfectly for that. But again, big kudos to everyone who put that on, because it was very, very well done. Okay, so that covers our Canadian men. I think we should move on to the American men. We'll stick with the guys for now because this was an equally thrilling race. And Chris, do you want to maybe set up how the Americans did?
Yeah, on the American side, I mean, a lot of eyes were obviously on, you know, Scott Faubel and Jared Ward because they have the fastest personal best of the bunch and maybe the best credentials. But knowing that it was very stacked with a lot of the top Olympic marathon trials finishers, when you got to, you know, 10K to go, it was still sort of 10 deep, 14 deep. I forget what exactly it was. Noah Drotty looked really comfortable up there toward the front, and so did Jared Ward. And then at one point, Marty Hare makes his big move, and it looks inspiring because you could see he's already in pain when he makes that move because this pace was just aggressive from the start. He's got the perfect storyline to root for. He's a medical student who's spent like the last couple weeks working in the ICU. He's a father of two, and you know, you really just have to wonder sometimes when I'm like, all right, I sacrifice a ton of sleep to do the work that I do. I don't even understand where he finds the time to run himself with his busy schedule. So super inspiring. And then you've got a guy like Noah Drotty who had to scratch from the Olympic trials due to an injury and then like was supposed to race in the fall, but then had like a COVID false positive possibly that led to like a COVID scare. And he wasn't able to attend that race. So has been unable to race all year, finally puts it together. And those two guys go 208.59 for the win. So we get the sub 209 as promised. And then 209.09 by Noah Drotty was just a massive breakthrough. And then if you just run through the rest of the results, like Colin Benny, another massive performance from him, 209.38. Scott Faubel, 209.42. We had seven guys end up breaking 210. It was just incredible to see just like that train end up working. I think in a podcast episode I did last week with Faubel, he was just saying it's like you just have like this critical velocity just traveling together at the same exact time, and that's going to make a difference. And it ultimately did at the very end. So it was a really, really entertaining race to watch.
I love that. So you said critical velocity?
I think that's what the phrase that he used.
That's such a perfect way of describing it. And that was so true. Like, I think, you know, it's interesting. We don't often see these. I mean, mind you, there were obviously Canadians and some other internationals, but it was mainly an American race. And I think a race of this caliber, it's really uncommon to see outside of the U.S. Olympic trials, which there's so much on the line. So tactics are completely different there. It's very rare to see this number of guys who know each other well, like many of them train together. They're good buddies. They know each other's race tactics and they're just working together. Like you don't see that as often, particularly I think in the American side. Like sometimes you'll see little groups of, you know, five or six Kenyans working together. But yeah, this was kind of a treat. And to your point, Chris, you said this is there were seven guys who broke 210. I believe the last time that multiple guys broke 210, multiple Americans in one race, was the U.S. Olympic trials back in 2012. And there were only four of them that did it at that point. So this set a big record for the number of Americans going under that barrier. It was really, really cool to see. Can we really briefly talk about the puke heard across the world?
Oh, definitely. That was so beautiful because it was the ultimate sign that you leave it all out there. The Twitter responses to that were just like people were wondering why it was the color that it was. I think it stayed on the course for a little bit too long before someone maybe finally cleaned it up. So it was, you could see that it was going to happen just when he crossed the finish line. It's like, there it is. And one person on Twitter, I think even noted, I think it was from a tweet that I saw from Lindsey Krause, that like he didn't stop his watch until after he puked. So whatever his Strava upload was, it's got a couple extra seconds to it.
Yeah, you got to take priority here.
That's going to have data doctored a little bit, I'm sure.
Have you ever puked at a finish line, Chris or Maddie?
Never at a finish line. Maybe once after a workout, but maybe that just goes to show that I never actually take it all the way to the well in a workout or a race.
Chris, yeah. I'm in the same boat. One time after a workout, there was a vomit, and it was actually, I wasn't the only one. Like, it was like a mass vomit. And it was also, my coach would say, the dumbest workout he ever wrote. So it was
I was going to say that's either a sign of group food poisoning or it means that you all just kicked each other's asses really hard.
We didn't, like, we completely failed the workout. We were supposed to negative split some 400s, but instead of going faster, I think we all just like did this at the 200 and actually got slower. Like, it just didn't work. And then six of us puked after, and then we have not done it since.
Nice. Six pukes. That's got to set some kind of records too. I had some people reaching out being like, so was he holding his puke in until the finish line? And I was like, I think it was just, I think, you know how like your body just knows when you're done something, when you've just given it your all. And like, it's, I don't think it was probably a like intentional choice. I think it was just what happened.
Just, it just went. I did see he wasn't the only one that puked on the day. Emma Bates, I think in her Instagram recap, said that she threw up four times, and that's kind of like why she struggled, I guess, the way she did. She still came close to her PR. So you got to wonder, you got to blame it, I guess, on the puke there. If puking four times takes enough time off where it probably cost her the PR.
Well, that's way worse, puking during a race. Like, puking at the end is just like, it's more of a celebration. But puking throughout is a sign of distress.
I feel like the holding it to the finish line, it's almost like holding in a cry, you know, like when you're in the middle of something really stressful and like you get through the day. And then after when it's over, you're just like,
just the release.
It's a release. Yeah.
All right. Well, you talked about Emma Bates there. Let's move on to the women. You know what? Let's stick with the Americans, and then we'll finish off with our awesome Canadian finishers. But let's go right to Sarah Hall. And Chris, I'm going to let you take this one because I think Maddie and I could both talk about it forever, but I think we're going to give it to you.
Yeah, so Sarah Hall has gotten into this habit of doubling up on marathons, where last year she was pretty ambitious in trying to do the Berlin-New York double and then the trials, which those three I think were in pretty close proximity, where she ran pretty fast at the Berlin Marathon. I forget what the exact time was. It was a big PR. Then from there, drops out of New York, I think due to cramping. And then from there, doesn't have the day. And I think also drops out of the trials. She rebounds at the London Marathon, runs 2:22:01 to finish second with one of the best kicks we've seen at a World Marathon Majors. And I think of this year in general. And then from there, gets the idea that the marathon project is going to be one last crack, I think, for the year for her, unless she's got something planned in the next 11 days for 2020 to try and get after Dina Castor's American record, which I believe is 2:19:36. So she went for it. And the surprise of the race was that she wasn't alone in doing it. Kellen Taylor kept the cards close to her chest and didn't tell anyone really, maybe before this, unless her coach Ben Rosario was filled in on it, that she was also going to go with the Pacers. So very early on into the race, you see Sarah Hall, two male Pacers, and Kellen Taylor just battling it out. And and then from there was a big gap until you had the next group of women, which was Emma Bates and Stephanie Bruce and Kira D'Amato, which if you're in that boat, you probably are wondering, it's like, okay, if they blow up, we have a chance of catching them. So they're taking like the conservative approach to the win, whereas the other two are just hanging on for as long as they can with this aggressive pace. And Sarah Hall did. She ended up winning in 2:20:32, which is the second fastest time by an American ever. And Kellen Taylor finishes third in 2:25:22, running it maybe in like the hardest way possible, where she was in no man's land for the longest time, didn't get much assistance from the Pacers, but hung tough. Kira D'Amato, who has been on fire this absolute year, where she was, I think, ran 2:34 at the Olympic trials and finished 15th, really started to, for some reason, took to the virtual racing and the solo racing like no other person, where I try and do some of these virtual races, I can't get the motivation that I'll fall maybe a minute or two short of my PRs. She was knocking everything out of the park, whether it was the 5K solo, a 10K in a race in Boston. And then she was proving herself against other competitors, at other pro racers at some legit races throughout the fall. And you had to wonder if the Cinderella story was going to end with her blowing up at her second try at the marathon, or if the magic was going to continue. And she really did keep it together. And ended up negative splitting her 222.56 for second place, which is just absolutely incredible. She, you know, she's got a tremendous story. I interviewed her last month for the City of Smack podcast right before she ran the 10-mile American record on the roads. And so, yeah, major kudos to her. And then from there, you have Emma Bates finished fourth. And I guess, like we said, the hardest way possible, throwing up. And then Canada pops into the top five with Natasha Wodak at 226.19, which was really incredible to watch because, you know, a lot of the focus on the broadcast was obviously on the American women. But if you were following sort of the splits and the tracker on the sideline, you could see that she was making all the right moves with a time that probably puts her in that sort of mix for that Olympic spot.
I loved watching Natasha's race. I was very excited for her. I'm a big fan generally. And she's another person who does take big swings. You know, like she's not afraid to say, you know, this is what I'm going to try and do. Watch me try. Sometimes she fails, but yesterday she didn't. And that's exactly what she set out to do. She said she was training at 226 pace to hopefully run faster than Rachel's time and open that window of possibility for herself for the marathon team. However, she said she also hasn't ruled out the 10,000. And I don't think she's an interest in doubling, not to my knowledge thus far. So this has just put her in a really nice position where she might have the power to choose which event she wants to do, which event she would rather train for, and which event she feels more excited about.
I think this is such a great culmination for Natasha. We mentioned she's almost 40. She's our 10,000 meter national record holder. For about a week, she was our half marathon national record holder. Just going back almost a year ago, where our women's half marathon record was broken three times in the space of 7 weeks. She does hold the esteem of being the first Canadian woman ever to go under 70 minutes in that distance. But, you know, Olympian, Commonwealth Games athlete, Pan Am Games athlete, like she has been on almost every national team she set out to be on. She's held multiple records. And this kind of felt like the unfinished business in my mind for Natasha Wodak, was getting after this marathon. And like, she just knows herself so well. And like you said, Maddie, like she was super consistent.
It was like bonkers. Like her, like every K was the same. Like she was like a freaking metronome. Lindsay Tessier posted her splits and it was literally like 320, 320, 320, 320 for like 42K.
That's right. And the disappointing thing for me was like, and I get it, but we didn't have a camera on her. So I was just like hitting refresh on the leaderboard updates and like the ticker. And like I was refreshing Maddie's tweets because she was live tweeting the whole thing for Canadian running.
And the tracker, like the tracker just didn't pick up a lot of the women's 30K split for some reason. Like it got their 40, but it just didn't get their 30. And I was like, show me Natasha. This is why I'm still here. But yeah, super, super great race to follow. And another kind of interesting note is that the women's 10,000 Olympic standard is actually faster than our Canadian women's 10,000 record, which Natasha owns. So if she was to run Olympic standard, that would also be a new national record and a big PB for her.
But to keep in mind, that was true in the marathon for like ever. I mean, for almost every Olympic cycle, the standard was faster than our Canadian record. So we've seen it happen before, and I think we're going to see a lot of these women who are excelling in the half and the full probably trying their hand at some 10,000s on the track this year as well, given the opportunity.
Yeah, I want her or Andrea to take a proper stab at the 10,000, because between, you know, Andrea, Little Miss 14:59 5K.
Right. And half marathon world record holder or Canadian record holder.
Yeah, and both of their halves. I want that 10,000 record to be faster, because I think we got the horses to make it faster.
When is the Canadian track trials? Because I need to put this on my calendar now.
So the 10,000 actually isn't part of the track trials. It's held earlier because we name our race, walk, marathon and 10,000 team in May. And then the rest of the team is named like July 1st. So the Canadian track trials are...
The Canadian track trials, yeah. I was going to say the current website says error 404, page not found, which is kind of like the perfect encapsulation of this year.
I should know. It's the only thing I technically have on my calendar. But yeah, last weekend in June.
It's good to know.
It's always around your trials, except ours is like 4 days and yours is like 2 weeks. So that's the main difference.
That is, yeah. It's a total marathon and like just a test of attrition for even the media, I would say, those 10 days. I think you get 2 days of a break, but even then I think like I'd just stay really busy, but you have to treat it, I guess, like the Super Bowl. I know when I was prepping for, it's funny because like I tell people I was prepping for the Olympics in 2016 before I went. And that's like always a cool thing to tell, you know, random people. It's like, yeah, I'm going to the Olympics, but you don't tell them that it's like as a media member.
This is why you get recognized in the bathroom, Chris.
Yeah, I'm going to the Olympics. I've been prepping for it for a while. And what they don't understand is that I was just putting together a bunch of, you know, stats and notes ahead of time for the actual games. But yeah, I kind of, by the time that the trials roll around, I've got like a whole Google Doc that just has a ton of, you know, statistics. And sometimes I have pre-written articles that are just like, just fill in the blank, wins, blah, 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 blah. And then like fill in the time. Funniest story was, I think in the 2016 Olympics for the men's 100, it was Bolt versus Gatlin. Everyone really had that hyped up. And I had one article for if Bolt wins, I had another article if Gatlin wins, and I had a third article if neither one of those two won, and then a fourth article if Bolt false started like he did in 2011. So I was like totally prepared for that. So I take it to an extreme when it comes to the Olympics. And so what the pandemic did is it just bought me more time to just start pre-writing a ton of stuff.
What is that game called when it's not Balderdash, when you like fill, like you write a story and it says like noun, verb?
Mad Libs.
Mad Libs.
Mad Libs. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just Mad Lib article writing. I've kind of done a similar thing before, especially when you're at like the halfway part. Mm-hmm. Of a marathon, you can have your story basically written.
Yeah, except yesterday I feel like it was one of those races where you still didn't even know. It was kind of, and that's what sometimes makes it awesome. I've been at marathons. I like to think of like even the year I think that Shalane won, or maybe no, because that's the year that I was running. But the following year, I remember covering it, and the dramatics of it I think just played out really late into the race, where you're sort of like in that state of shock where I'm like, what am I going to write?
Well, that was like Sarah Hall in London, like, mm-hmm. you know, here up at, you know, 3 a.m. watching the women's race, kind of like, I woke up for this. Like, yeah. It was just like very predictable. And then in the last 200 meters, you're like, thanks, Sarah Hall. That was totally worth it. You're my story.
2 minutes for 2 hours. I love it.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's round off these final couple of Canadian women, because we had Kinsey Middleton, who unfortunately DNF'd. She had a really strong first half, but Maddie, was it around, did she have a 30K split? I know that you said that the tracker didn't record a lot of.
Almost no one did. So I'm not actually sure where she dropped out. The last split she recorded was 25K, but she could have recorded a 30K split and it just didn't get picked up.
Yeah. So Kinsey, unfortunately, has been dealing with some Achilles bursitis, and she thought she had it under control. But as we know, anything can happen in a marathon, and it seems like it just got the better of her. So unfortunately, our former Canadian champion was not able to finish this race. But again, should there be opportunities in the new year, I'm sure she'll be getting after that. And then we have sort of an honorary Canadian. I always put a little asterisk next to Sarah Inglis's name because she is a Scottish athlete, but she has been living and training in Canada for years. And this woman, poor Sarah, just missed Olympic standard. She was ninth, running 2:29.41. Again, that standard is 2:29.30. So that was probably a little heartbreaking.
But a great debut.
Huge debut.
For me, it was a little gutting to have Kinsey drop out of the race because, and this is something I'd recommend to your listeners to try and partake in next year when we have like a whole fall marathon stretch. We decided, me and a couple of the other friends of mine through CDS Mag, decided to do a fantasy draft where we did 6 rounds and you score your top five as if it was like a cross country race. And I drafted Kinsey, I believe, in like the third round or something like that. And, you know, then I think Natasha was selected, I think, 2 picks later. And I was like, no, I was like, maybe that's who I intended to pick. And so I just totally messed up with that. But it made you just so much more invested in the race where I was paying attention to the lead pack for sure. But then I'm looking down in the standings, I'm like, all right, where are my 3 and 4 runner? Where's my 5th runner? it was just so much fun to do. And I think we're going to end up doing it for all the fall marathons next year, because, and you know, the talent pool there is going to be very interesting, where it's like, of course, Eliud Kipchoge is going to get picked with the first overall pick. But we're going to throw in some wild cards. So like for this game that we played, which we all put down, I think like $10 total. I guess gambling isn't totally like legal in track and field, but we're like, all right, this is just among friends. It'll be okay. But it was funny to see, like, I implemented the rule right before the draft, just threw it on everyone right before we selected. I said, every team needs to have one of the half marathon qualifiers. And so all of a sudden you're not just drafting, you know, six marathoners. You have to take into account, when am I going to select that half marathon pick? And so, it was just so geeky and nerdy, but a lot of fun. So I recommend it to people to do next year. And like, you can get creative with it, where maybe next year for one of the fall marathons, you're going to be like, all right, every team's going to need to have a Canadian, and you're going to be digging for like, all right, this guy's, you know, ranked 250th in the field, but I'm going to have to take him now, because Cam Levins is the only other person picked. So we'll get creative with it, and it'll be a lot of fun. And it'll be a thing that it's like, kind of like the NFL, you have it, because all the marathons are going to be stacked up on one another. It's going to be week after week after week. And so it was just such a really fun race to way to follow the race. And so, yeah, I ended up finishing last, I think, in, on both sides.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was rough. On the women's side, I had 3 DNFs. And so that put me at like 100 points to just even start.
Chris, weren't there only 3 DNFs on the women's side? Did you choose 100% of the women who DNF?
Because that's impressive in a different way.
I'm seeing 6 DNFs, and I had Kinsey and Christina McKnight, and I believe maybe Abby McNulty. So, yeah, they had a rough day, and I had a rough day too.
Well, Chris, since you offered it, we are 100% going to borrow from that idea. We'll have to have some conversations after this podcast, because I think that's such a great way to get people enthused. Like you said, like, just gives you a little more reason to get invested in some runners that you might not otherwise have had a lot going for you. So yeah, we're stay tuned, listeners. We are 100% putting together a Canadian running / shakeout podcast version of this. Fantasy.
The winner was decided by just 1 point, which is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And it came down, I think, to like their each one of the teams, like sixth person. And it was just so funny, because my friend Tim, who ended up winning the pool, picked his sixth man based off the fact that he was just his physical therapist here in New York, who helped put him back together from an injury. And he ends up just barely beating one of the other guys. And so it was, yeah, the dramatics played out behind the scenes on a spreadsheet as well.
Well, and word to the wise, you know, you're only as strong as your sixth runner.
Yeah.
You know, that's cross country rules. I've been that sixth runner many a time. I know.
It's so true. Oh, that's so fun. Well, you had a lot to follow then, Chris. Thanks so much for helping us break all this down. Are there any other nuggets that we wanted to cover here that we haven't gotten to? I know we've taken up a lot of your time, Chris.
No, I think that was great. And it was always just fun to relive all of that. And, you know, I'm wondering if the marathon project becomes a thing in 2021 again, but the optimistic side of me says, hopefully not, because we'd get back all the major marathons. And, you know, if people in the States want like a really fast course in December, I think CIM tends to lend itself to be an opportunity to run fast there too. But if there was, you know, an emotional attachment by some of the winners and the top runners here that they vouch for it, I'd be all in favor of, you know, tuning in again on a Sunday morning and watching with a bunch of people. But yeah, it was really great to see. And I think definitely much needed by, I guess, for the running community to just come together again and rally around an event like this. So it was great to see.
Totally agree with that. I think this was like the outlet that we were collectively seeking, all of us. And I think like your point about the timing of this is really interesting. I saw a bunch of tweets about like a late December marathon is either, you know, in most years, you're either hanging on from your fall marathon training, or the other kind of tagline that was used a lot was like, and it's only December, which was like code for like, I haven't done any speed work yet.
So true. So true.
Chris, what can we look forward to with you? What are some of your upcoming episodes or projects that you're getting really excited about?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple more podcast episodes this year. I was almost going to call it after I've got an episode with Wayne Colati dropping, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, where she's got like a really inspiring backstory and told it in depth with me for, you know, I think over an hour, which was great to hear. So definitely like ending the year on a strong note with the podcast. But then, you know, I guess the Marathon Project added like a couple more guests before we finally close out this year. And so it'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm just kind of looking forward to possibly, you know, getting out to some track meets, you know, this spring or and then, you know, towards the summer before Tokyo. So I'll be busy no matter what, as usual. So yeah, if people want to subscribe and listen to everything on the City of Smack podcast, that's where you can find my voice again.
Awesome. And like I said, we will link all of that through our show notes and the write-up through Canadian Running Magazine. Maddie, any other questions you have or comments?
I think that's all for me. Thanks so much, Chris. This was super fun.
Yeah, we're so grateful that you did this, Chris. We really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
Listeners, we will be taking a small break from the Rundown between Christmas and New Year's, but tune back in the first full week of January for your first Rundown of 2021, and we're going to be joined at that time by another awesome guest who we will keep a secret for now. But in the meantime, for your week in review, I'm Kate.
And I'm Maddie.
And I'm Chris.
Happy holidays, everyone. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll chat again soon.